It's the holiday party of the year. You're listening to WOR's third annual Red Kettle Day Radiothon to benefit the Salvation Army. And what's better than listening on the radio? Being here in person. Come on down and join us now through 6 p.m. at the magnificent Centennial Memorial Temple of the Salvation Army Headquarters, 120 West 14th Street between 6th and 7th Avenues in New York City. Here again is John Gambling.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much for the introduction. It is a very happy Friday, a special Friday, as we raise money for our third year in a row for the Red Kettle Day for the Salvation Army. It is you that is making it all happen. 800-234-1710, that's the magic telephone number, or go online at WOR710.com. We've gotten a lot from you this hour. We've got a $50,000 matching grant from the Green Family Foundation. $50,000. That means that every single penny gets doubled up, upwards of $50,000. So come on, we're doing pretty well here. We've got $78,000 on the tote board right now. So again, while I talked with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, don't forget that those operators are standing by, as they say, at 800-234-1710. Mr. Mayor, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Thank you very much. I couldn't be better doing the good work for the Salvation Army.
Well, Salvation Army's a great partner with the city. They do a lot of the social service work that the city can't do. They do it around the country. My interest is in New York. And I was talking to our deputy mayor, Linda Gibbs, yesterday, and she said without the Salvation Army, we would be in real trouble in terms of providing services to those who aren't as lucky as you and I.
And I know, having talked with your Office of Emergency Management folks before, they have in the past looked to the Salvation Army for organization as well as...
It's a very well-run organization. And, you know, to me, I think of it sort of in the same class as the Red Cross, that they prepare for things. They have done it for many generations, and you can always depend on them to show up and fill in and do a lot of the stuff that would never occur to you if you're new at the game, and they are not new at the game. They've been helping people for an awful long time.
Since 1865, I think it is.
That was a long time. Before your grandfather.
Well, no,
went
that was
radio.
That was John, I think maybe AZ or something.
They hadn't
like
even
that.
Invented radio in those days, I don't think.
No, you're absolutely
Can
right.
Can you explain something to me? I heard Joe Bartlett was just talking about the NBA. I listened this morning to a story on another radio station, namely mine, that talked about all of these trades in the NBA, and I could not for the life of me understand. I was going to get out a pencil if they ever repeated it and
diagram
draw it out, diagram. There were three-way trades, and one was vetoed, and this. Somebody good was maybe coming to the Nets, which would be great, because I drove by the Atlantic Yards yesterday. The stadium is really,
it's really
the roof's on it. Yeah, really
exactly.
Coming along.
Phenomenal.
And somebody good for the Knicks, which would be great. It'd be wonderful to have those two teams have a real competitive rivalry in this city. That'd be great for sports, great for the NBA, and great for the fans here.
Yeah, I heard one line yesterday about those trades that said that the one particular trade was denied by the league because it was bad for basketball. I went, what? How could that be?
Beats me, but I'm looking forward to the Atlantic Yards to be open. I've bought my tickets. I have my tickets for the Knicks, and my youngest daughter, who's a sports fanatic, will want to go.
You think that, have you heard any rumblings about the Islanders moving possibly to Brooklyn?
No, but that's a logical thing for people to promote because they've got an arena and you want to use it as much as you can. I think out of Nassau Coliseum they wouldn't be happy, so I'll stay out of that. But I have tickets for the Rangers. You know, I don't have a chance to go as much as I would like, but I want to go to the first game on Christmas Day, I think it is, this year. The Knicks, so I've got to talk to my daughter. If we can work it on the schedule, we'll go do that. But it's good for, I'm glad the NBA is back because it's good for the economy and it's fun. And I grew up in Boston, so I was a big Celtics fan. And the first game this year is at Madison Square Garden on Christmas Day is the Knicks versus the Celtics.
There you go.
So I'm going to have to be very careful to not smile no matter who makes the basket.
Yeah, down on the green end, right?
Well, but yeah, I mean, I remember the parquet floor. In fact, I remember they had Bruins and Celtics games the same day. You would go in, they'd play it, and then they'd come on the ice, and then they'd come and put the parquet floor down over the ice, and then the Celtics would come out and play. And you just sat in your seats the whole time. It was one.
Oh,
was
you like, mean you could get true. A doubleheader?
Yeah, I've, you know, it's so long ago, but that's the way I remember it. And certainly I remember movies where you had, you got two movies and Movie Tone news in the middle, and maybe a cartoon. Did you have as well?
Even I remember that. That was a while back.
Yeah,
a while back. All right, let's see here. 800-234-1710. I have to keep remembering that. And again, we have a $50,000 match from the Green Family Foundation working right now. 82,000, Mr. Mayor, on our tote board. Our goal is 500,000. So we've got a little hike to go before 6 o'clock.
Everybody's tuning in right now to listen to you. I'm just sort of carrying along, and you'll do it.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I got some questions for you. There's a lot in the news that has to do with you or is related to that. Governor this week in the legislature moving to reconstitute what they call the tax code, pushing the numbers up to those, $1 million plus, I think. Reaction?
Look, the governor has a difficult fiscal situation to deal with. Everybody wants stuff. Nobody wants to give up anything they have. In fact, they want more, and nobody wants to pay for it. Other than that, it's an easy job he has, and we have a similar one here in New York City. And the governor's got to decide how to run the state. And, I've always said we will support him. I'm concerned that when there are cuts or when there's money to be distributed, that it's distributed fairly. New York City has 40% of the population, and should get 40% of the benefits or whatever it is. You can even, given the percentage of the revenue of the tax base that we are, which is greater than 40%, we can make a good case. There's lots of parts of the state that need help. That's the governor's responsibility. My responsibility is for five boroughs. So, we'll see the details. I haven't seen them, but
I've seen some numbers.
This is his job, and he'll do what he thinks is right. That's what he's elected to do, and I'm going to do the same thing for the city.
Some of the numbers that are being thrown around this morning are $100 million to places like Long Island, Southern Tier, and the city, $30 million, something like that.
Well, I haven't seen all the details, and we'll work it out. We did, I know, got some money for Hunts Point, the produce market, which we put in $50 million. I called Washington yesterday because there's a federal program. We might be able to get some money and talk to the secretary. Hopefully we'll get the money. So we really do need to redo the produce market. It's not competitive anymore. It's designed poorly. So if they bring in a train, they've got to move the trucks out first before they can unload the train. The roads aren't as good as you'd like. It's difficult to maneuver in there. It's an old facility. The fish market is brand new, but something like 22% of all of the produce that's consumed on the East Coast comes through there. It's a very big deal. And from, I think there's 49 different states that send their produce through Hunts Point. It employs a lot of people.
I know there's competition from the other states that
they're
looking for.
Other states, New Jersey's been very aggressive in offering monies and benefits to the vendors to move over to there. We can't get into a bidding war, but we can make this as attractive as we possibly can, and this would help us do that. So for that, I'm grateful from the state, and we'll see how some of the other monies. And listen, we've got our own senators, state senators and assembly people, and part of their job is to, including the Speaker of the Assembly, comes from Manhattan. They've got to fight in Albany for monies for New York City. And I can just ask for it. But they're the ones that, it's a democracy up there. You've got a legislature and a governor. They work together. They seem to work well together at the moment. We expect them to bring home the bacon.
All right, we're talking with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We're still raising money, and we want those phones to ring, 800-234-1710. I've got $83,000 on my tote board. We are looking for more, and don't forget that every dollar gets doubled this hour. We've got a $50,000 matching grant from the Green Family Foundation. We thank them for that. The taxi bill, I read, it's kind of like Howie Mandel's television show, Deal or No Deal. I thought you would tell us what the latest is on the outer borough taxis.
Talked to the governor yesterday. I think over the last couple of months, we had had a bill. It was passed by the Senate and the Assembly in Albany, but not sent to the governor yet. Shelley Silver is sending that bill this morning, and then the governor legally has 10 days to decide what to do. He could sign it, which I hope he does. He could veto it, which I hope he doesn't. Or he could just let it lapse into law without doing either one, which I don't think he would do. He's expresses himself.
If it sits on the desk for 10 days, it then lapses into law?
It becomes law, mm-hmm. Yeah. Andrew Cuomo is a decision maker, and I might not always agree with his decisions, but I would guess that he wouldn't do that, but who knows. He and I have had a number of conversations over months for this, he said, about this. Had some small tweaks, as he described them to me. I said, we work with them. We have been working very well with the staffs. We've changed, as far as I can tell, to accommodate every single objection that or suggestion that he has made. It's about better phraseology. So I think it's what he really needs, and I hope he signs it.
It has seemed to me...
It would be $1 billion for New York City in this coming
fiscal
year.
Which means it'll be $1 billion the state does not necessarily have to...
The state wasn't going to give it to us. It's $1 billion the taxpayers in New York City wouldn't have to do, and it's $1 billion in things that we would have to stop doing because we wouldn't have it. $1 billion is a lot of money, even to a city of our size. So that's it. But I think much more importantly than that, the bill would, for the first time, give taxi service to Staten Island, to Brooklyn, to Queens, and to the Bronx, and to Manhattan north of 96th Street. And if you think about that, that's a very major percentage of New York City that does not have taxi service now. It also accommodates a lot of people's desire to have handicap accessible taxis. All of the new yellows and medallions would require you to be handicap accessible, and some of the livery cars would be handicap accessible. So everything that everybody's raised, from the governor's staff, the governor, you, me, everybody else, I think we've accommodated it, and people in this city deserve to have taxis. And if you don't pass it now, you know, then it starts... Things fall apart. It's just the history of legislation. You got to do it or not do it, but you don't have another chance at it. This has been something people have been working on for 4 or 5 decades. All of a sudden, the stars are aligned. If you don't do it now, the stars aren't going to be aligned. But I'm very optimistic.
Who do you think are the ones that have really thrown the roadblock on?
Well, you know, the way it works is each... and this is true not just about taxis, but it's about everything. Those people that have vested interests, yellow cabs, owners, people that run their own yellow cabs or drivers, liveried cab owners and drivers, I mean, all of them have vested interests, and they try to make their case why their part of an industry should be favored or protected. It's natural, nothing wrong with that. It's government's job to sift through it and say, you know, look, democracy is everybody getting something and no one guy getting everything. When one guy gets everything, there's somebody that's a big loser. And that's not what's good government. You come to some agreement in the middle that sort of satisfies most. And this is true in any kind of legislation. You also have vested interests. There's each of the members of the Assembly and of the Senate represent their constituents, and particularly those who have not had service. We have a program to try to enforce the law that says if you get into a yellow cab, they've got to take you any place in the city. And the Taxi and Limousine Commission, run by David Yasky, former city councilman, is a very competent, smart guy. They hire students to flag down cabs, get in and say, I want to go too.
Oh, and see what happens.
And see what happens, yeah. And, you know, a very large percentage, quarter of them, a third of them, something like that, say, I ain't going there. And that's against the law. You have to do it. When you have a taxi medallion, you have a right to make some money. You also have an obligation to provide a service, and that service should be available to everybody in this city, regardless of where you live or what you look like or whatever. And it's just for too long, it's gone on and on and on, and everybody's talked about it. We want to get this done, and I think, when I've talked to the governor, he certainly understands the need and wants to provide service to everybody. He also understands the need. I said to him yesterday, you know, we've got every interest in helping him, because if the state doesn't do well fiscally, then that falls back on the city. We get less of the money we send up there back. It's our money, but, you know, some of it goes to support the rest of the state. That's just the way it is. So we want to help him. On the other hand, we have real interests here. And this, you can question why this ever goes before the state. It just does because of the law. But fundamentally, the only people that are influenced here, benefit or pay or whatever, are city residents. And if it hadn't been for the fiscal crisis back in the 70s, I don't know which laws were changed before my time, but these are the sort of things that should be really left up to the city. But nevertheless, the law says the state have to do it, so we're working with the governor. And the press always talks about these big battles. I mean, you know, I'm sure Andrew's doing the same thing I am. You shake your heads. When? Where? I mean,
conversations on the telephone.
You don't disagree. You don't agree every time, but you know these battles. I mean, come on. You have to work together the next day on the next issue, and one issue has nothing to do with another.
Well, I'm battling today, and I thank you very much for lending your time and your support to this. 800-234-1710. I'm talking to Mayor Michael Bloomberg, but I'm hoping, and I'm listening behind me on the stage here at the Centennial Memorial Temple. I hear the phone operators talking to you, so I know the phones are working, and they are ringing. 800-234-1710. We're at $83,000. So come on, keep that money coming. I've got a goal of $500,000. You know that WOR, we work in Wall Street on Broadway next to Zuccotti Park. The barricades around, how long do you think that they will be there?
Oh, I don't know. It's, you know, it just makes it easier to enforce the law. The law is that you have a right to protest. You don't have a right to set up structures, tents, and sleep there. And, you know, looking back, I think the city and the public handled it the right way. The public stood by and let people express themselves. They did it for a couple of months, including setting up, you can argue they shouldn't have set up the tents and that sort of thing. It became a safety hazard. It certainly was a problem for many people in the neighborhood, not everyone, but many, because there are people who go to school there, live there, work there, vacation there, walk through the park. They wanted their rights to do that, too. And after a reasonable period of time, we just all got together, and the public was really, if you go back and think about it, I think everybody said in retrospect, it was the right thing to do. We moved people out, but only for a few hours while we cleaned it. It really needed cleaning. It was a health hazard. And then let people right back in to protest.
So, and they are there, because at 3:30 in the morning when I walk by, there
are people there, and they have a right to do that. That's what the Bill of Rights is all about. That's what America is all about. But you don't have a right, as I keep saying, to deny other people their rights to express other views or their right to just go about their business and not express any view.
How about Congressman Nadler's call for an investigation into the police?
Once again, people want to make a big battle out of it. Look, Jerry Nadler is a congressman who's been there a long time. He works very hard for his district and for this country and for this city. And in most things, I agree with him. This thing, I think he's wrong. We don't need an investigation. What we did, the way the police conducted themselves and the sanitation department, a little bit the fire department, was providing ambulance service if needed. Almost not needed, I think, one or two. We did the right thing. We did it as respectfully as you can when you handle a big crowd, when some people say, I'm not going to go, you're going to arrest me, and that sort of thing. And police show amazing restraint, and they do that all the time. This is the greatest police department in the world. There's some numbers that came out a couple weeks ago about the number of times police fire their weapons and the number of people shot. It is so much less than any other city that I know of, and not just per capita, total. I mean, in many cases, it is an amazingly well-trained, well-disciplined police department. Every once in a while, somebody probably does something they shouldn't, but, you know, you got 35,000 uniform cops.
I watched them during the confrontation.
Yeah, I mean, the press made a big deal that they, you know, were denied their rights. They were asked, as we do with every such of thing where the police have to take action, you have to step aside so the police can do their job. You don't have a right as a press person, I don't think, to stand in the way just in the interest of you getting a story. We didn't keep anybody from reporting. They just had to stand to the side while the police did their job. Police have to protect people. Police are human beings. They want their lives protected as well. And in the middle of any police action, you just can't let another group get in and get in the way of doing something. It would also not be fair to the protesters, because then you're running around, you're working around things, it's hard to find out what's going on, hard to communicate, and then people can get hurt as well. So I think in looking back, they did a great job. And I loved it the other day. I don't know if you saw the fire department coming to the aid of
the police department with the hose.
Yeah, and I read in the paper. I haven't talked to Ray about it, but I think he sent pizza or food.
No, he was thrilled. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, they're there. There's somebody who's being threatened. They're not police. They're firefighters. What did they do? They didn't stand around and say, not my job. They did something, and they did it without hurting anybody. They took the hose, and they sprayed water on the ground. They didn't use a water cannon to blow you away. And Ray was...
Made it uncomfortable.
Yeah. And what would you expect them to do? They're citizens. They're human beings. They're city employees. They're well-trained. I thought they deserved a great thank you from everybody, and I had nothing to do with it, but I just tell you, I think Ray was 100% right.
Well, Mr. Mayor, again, let me thank you for coming down here today and taking some time today to come down to the temple here to help us with the
Salvation
Army.
Happy to do it. I'm glad that you're raising money. The Salvation Army really does make a difference, and as I said before, they do a lot of things for the city. We contract with them for a lot of social services, so I'm a big supporter of the Salvation Army, and I'm glad you and your station and kind of company owners are behind this. And I'll go listen to the news right now. Whose news will I listen to?
Actually, we're not going to have. This is Mr. Bartlett. We will not have any news today because we're going to move right along. But because we have so much to do. Thank you, my friend.
You're a good
friend. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, ladies and gentlemen.